This is Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, text number 13, and we'll also do 14 because there's no purport for 14. This chapter is entitled Residence of Jambudvip Offer Prayers. I'll just sing the Sanskrit. Harirhi sakshat bhagavan sharirinam atma chashanam evato yamipsitam hitva mahamstam yadi sajjate grihe tadamahatvam vayasadam patinam. Translation. Just as aquatics always desire to remain in the vast mass of water, all conditioned living entities naturally desire to remain in the vast existence of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if someone very great by material calculations fails to take shelter of the Supreme Soul, but instead becomes attached to material household life, his greatness is exactly like that of a young, low-class couple. One who is too attached to material life loses all good spiritual qualities. Please repeat. Just as aquatics always desire,
just as aquatics always desire
to remain in the vast mass of water,
to remain in the vast mass of water,
All conditioned living entities naturally desire to remain in the vast existence of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if someone very great
by material calculations
fails to take shelter
of the Supreme Soul,
but instead becomes attached to material household life,
His greatness
is like that of a young low-class couple.
One who is too attached to material life
loses all good spiritual qualities. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada. Although crocodiles are very fierce animals, they are powerless when they venture out of the water onto land. When they are out of the water, they cannot exhibit their original power. Similarly, the all-pervading Supersoul, Paramatma, is the source of all living entities, and all living entities are part and parcel of Him. When the living entity remains in contact with the all-pervading Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, He manifests His spiritual power, exactly as the crocodile exhibits its strength in the water. In other words, the greatness of the living entity can be perceived when he is in the spiritual world, engaged in spiritual activities. Many householders, although well educated in the knowledge of the Vedas, become attached to family life. They are compared herein to crocodiles out of water, for they are devoid of all spiritual strength. Their greatness is like that of a young husband and wife who, although uneducated, praise one another and become attracted to their own temporary beauty. This kind of greatness is appreciated only by low-class men with no qualifications. Everyone should therefore seek the shelter of the Supreme Soul, the source of all living entities. No one should waste his time in the so-called happiness of materialistic household life. In the Vedic civilization, this type of crippled life is allowed only until one's 50th year, when one must give up family life and enter either the order of Vanaprastha, independent retired life for cultivation of spiritual knowledge, or Sannyas, the renounced order, in which one completely takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Vimitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamahyam Dadati Svaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Kurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakantitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostase Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Priyadhathe Vrindavane Shri Vrishabhanamostate Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vancha Kalpata Rukhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyarevacha Patitanam Pavanekro Vaishnavedyo Namo Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Rasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Harir hi Sakshat Bhagavat Sharirinam Atma jhashanam yadatoyam itsitam hitva mahans tam yadi sajjate grihe tada mahatvam vayasasam dhatinam. Just as aquatics always desire to remain in the vast mass of water, all conditioned living entities naturally desire to remain in the vast existence of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if someone very great by material calculations fails to take shelter of the Supreme Soul, but instead becomes attached to material household life, his greatness is like that of a young, low-class couple. One who is too attached to material life loses all good spiritual qualities. Those who were listening carefully yesterday may have noticed that Srila Prabhupada referred to this verse in yesterday's purport. He said, as explained in the next verse, Krishna is the original source of all living entities. So now we're on that verse, and this is what it says. Harir hi sakshat bhagavan sharirinam. For all of us who have material bodies, Krishna is directly the soul or the bhagavan of all of us. So, here it's being emphasized that our natural position is to be in the water, so to speak, rather than the land. We often hear Srila Prabhupada mention this analogy. You can take a fish out of water, you can give that fish a nice BMW, you can give that fish a nice bank account, nice wife, nice prasadam, nice house, everything first class, plenty of friends, social prestige, political clout, anything that you might want in this world. But he's not going to be happy because he belongs where? Similarly, we always feel dissatisfied no matter what we gain in this world. Everyone sitting in this room tonight, by some estimations, is pretty successful. Because we're not starving. There's a large part of the world's population that cannot get enough to eat, or they don't have any security. Anybody, anytime can come and attack all of them. Or there's, you know, they don't have a proper place to live. So many things. So we're all doing pretty well by material calculation, and yet all of us at the same time that we're doing pretty well, comparatively speaking, we all have this gnawing feeling inside that something's missing. And we go from one project to another, from one lifetime to another, from one illusion to another, trying to find happiness in a place where it doesn't really exist. Why doesn't it exist here? Yesterday we heard something about this. He was saying that all the devas and their good qualities reside in the person who is 100% devoted to Krishna consciousness. It was described in the commentary on that verse that the devas, they don't reside permanently with a person who's not Krishna consciousness, in Krishna consciousness, and they also don't reside completely in such a person, because they consider that these people are going to take whatever gifts we give to them and then kick us away. So why should we associate with such ingrates? This is what the demigods are thinking. And on the other hand, they do stay with the devotee, because they're thinking, to get association like this is not possible in Svargaloka, because everybody is bewildered by material happiness there. So we should stay with this devotee and try to imbibe some Krishna consciousness, because this devotee is constantly thinking of the welfare of the world and is constantly hearing and chanting about the nectarian pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So the demigods, they like to associate with devotees, and they don't like to associate with non-devotees. So here we have, it's described here, that when we're in our natural condition, that means to say when we're in the water of Krishna consciousness, or when we're in the ocean of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we described this a few days ago. Rupa Goswami makes this analogy, that we're like the fish or the aquatics, here Prabhupada says, crocodiles who live in the water of this ocean of Bhakti Rasa. Bhakti Rasa Amrita. Deathless ocean of Bhakti nectar. So all kinds of aquatics, some of them are crocodiles, some of them are whales, some of them are small guppies, some of them are dolphins, so many different kinds of aquatics. And in the same way, there are many different kinds of devotees. But all of them are feeling the happiness of Krishna consciousness, and all of them, they eternally enjoy in relation to the Supreme Lord. The karmis cannot enjoy like this. There's always something missing, they're always looking for something that isn't there. And it never satisfies the heart. That's described early in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yayatma suprasidati. When our love in particular, love is the main thing that we're missing in this world. And it's the main thing that we're seeking in this world. And we don't find it in this world, which is why we're suffering. But love has to be of a certain quality in order to qualify really as love. What is that? Two qualities. Who knows what they are? We mentioned it, I think. Ahaituki.
Unconditional.
And?
Unmotivated.
Apratihata. Unconditional means unmotivated. And therefore, because it has no condition binding it, it's free. And it's apratihata. You cannot destroy it. Nobody can take away this kind of love from you. Because in this world, nobody wants it. They want to call something else love, isn't it? Lust, or anger, or greed, or madness, or envy, or illusion. These are the six things that you get in material existence. And quite often we try to call these things love. And we may fool some people, because we're fooling ourselves. But ultimately, we're never going to get anywhere with that. So it's a frustrating existence, material existence. Exactly like a fish out of the water. So we've heard Prabhupada use this analogy many times. Now we know where it comes from. It comes from the fifth canto, chapter 18, text number 13, Prahlad Maharaj. Very insightful comment that he makes. Can we think like this to offer such a prayer? So, crocodiles. Srila Prabhupada says they're powerless when they get out of the water. And similarly, we are disempowered in this material world. That's why everyone is seeking empowerment. Because they're disempowered in this material world. Because they're out of their element. They don't want to admit it, but that's in fact why everyone is a pauper here. Everyone is a poor man, trying to get something back of his original optimus. But that doesn't come until we embrace the principle of real love, which is there has to be no hetu. Hetu means a motive or an agenda or some reason. And it also has to be apratihata, unstoppable love. If your love is unconditional, causeless, then nothing can stop it. You see? I don't know if I explained this before, but it's something that's it's an important point to make. My tabla teacher is an American, and he's not an ISKCON devotee. He's a Dr. David Courtney, who is in the Texas Institute of Indian Studies. And he's a very good musician. He's a genius, actually, a very smart man. So he once wrote an essay about arranged marriages. You may have guessed that he had an arranged marriage. So his principle was actually this. His thesis was the same. If there's a reason that you love the spouse, then there's a reason that you will stop loving your spouse. It's counterintuitive, isn't it? Usually when we get an anniversary card, the women always, they never forget anniversaries. Sometimes men forget, but women never forget. And God help the man who forgets. Anyway, if we get an anniversary card and it doesn't have a long enough list, then that's also a problem. But actually, the fact of the matter is that there should be absolutely no reason that you love your spouse, save and except one thing, which is that this person is your spouse. This is a haitiki. There's no reason. It's causeless. This person is my spouse, therefore I love this person. You see? That kind of love, it will stay. As long as you want that person to be your spouse. As long as you're willing to keep that commitment. Nowadays, people make so many commitments at the wedding time. They profess undying love for one another and so many things. But then, a few years later, when the hetu is not there anymore, then the thing is pratihata. Sometimes even the spouse is pratihata. You see? Because it's not really love. This is actually more accurately described as lust or anger or greed or madness or envy or illusion. So real love is of this nature, and things are valued in this world to the extent that they reflect this standard of love. Because this is the standard of love that is spiritual. It's the same standard that's given in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam when we're describing the love between the Jivatma and the Supreme Paramatma. Anybody know the verse? First canto. Ahaituki apratihatma apratihata yayatma suprasidati. Love has to be like this. Unconditional, therefore it's uninterrupted. So he wrote this in his essays. They're very smart. And this is the approach that's taken in the world of dharma. Because dharma is also causeless. If we study Bhagavad Gita chapters 14, 17, and 18, we know that Krishna describes different modes of faith, and he describes different modes of intelligence, different modes of determination, different modes of sacrifice, charity, and austerity. All these things he describes in three modes. How many things is that? It's five or six things times three. You get about, well, you can understand. It's a lot of different possibilities. You see? So when he's talking about determination and sacrifice in the mode of goodness, the nature is like this. One should do what one is doing. One should make the sacrifices that one is making, or make the commitment that one is making in this case, just because it ought to be done. No other reason. That's dharma. And then it will be good. It will be sattvic and it will be progressive. Urvam gacchanti sattvastha. A person who is in the mode of goodness will automatically be elevated. Therefore, the Shastra is always enjoying us to do things that elevate us to the mode of goodness or keep us in the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness itself will elevate you. If we go into the mode of passion, then we may get some so-called success or progress, but it will be horizontal. You're not really moving up if you're not moving down. And when you do things that are tamasic in the mode of ignorance, then you definitely go down. You see? So a human being has to be discriminate about what to do and what not to do. And that's easy enough because, as Krishna says in chapter 16, at the end, anybody know the verse? There's a few verses. They're worth reading. So I will. He says, "You should understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya vyavasthitau. Natva shastra vidhanoktam karma kartum iharhasi." Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may be gradually elevated. What happens if you don't follow this advice? Yashastra vidhamutsrujya vartate kamakarataha nasasiddhimavapnoti nasukham naparamgatim. A person who rejects the injunctions of the shastras and works whimsically, kamakarataha, just according to whatever it is that you want to do instead of what you should do, then that person doesn't get perfection, he says. He doesn't even get happiness. What to speak of the supreme destination. And he says, acharati atmanaha shreyas tato yati parangatim. Actually, one should only strive for shreyas. Shreyas means that standard of excellence that is preeminently worthwhile, but not necessarily very easy to attain. And what's the other option, if not shreyas? What will it be? There are two things, shreyas and prayas. Prayas means the thing which is immediately appealing. It's automatically dear, but not necessarily that worthwhile, and neither is it very much excellent. Just like children, if you leave children to be and don't train them up, they'll never take a bath. Isn't it right? They never like to take a bath. Sometimes they do, but generally they're all screaming and whining when you try to give them a bath. I know, because I saw it happen this morning. So, and it's like that with so many other things. When it's time to go to school, I remember one, I can still remember, this is 50 years ago, and I can still remember, I was swinging from the branch of the lemon tree that was in my backyard in Southern California. I was only 5, like a monkey, playing without any responsibility whatsoever. And then they came and told me all of a sudden, tomorrow you have to go to school. I said, oh, school, okay, what's that? I thought it would go on forever, just while, you know, just playing irresponsibly. So this is called shreyas. But shreyas means, raise your hand if you're a parent and you're not making any endeavor to send your child to school. Any parents not sending their kids to school? No, of course not. We all send our kids to school because we know they're going to grow up, and we also know what happens when you grow up in this world and have no adhikar for anything. You see? So this is intelligent, to act in such a way that we're elevated, to think about our future, to think about something that's ultimately worthwhile, even if it's not immediately appealing. That is human. So human life is meant for this kind of responsibility, and in a word, it's called dharma. Shreyas basically means dharma, and that dharma is the means towards shreyas. So that's the standard of detached love. Now on the other hand, since we're talking about this topic, here it's an interesting comparison being given. And it's not really very well elaborated in the purport, and it's not very clear from the verse either, but Srila Prabhupada says that those who are They may be well educated, they may be in a worldly sense successful, but they have no sense of bhakti. They may even have Vedic knowledge, he says here, but they have no sense of bhakti or not much interest in it. He said their greatness is just like that of a young husband and wife, who although uneducated praise one another and become attracted to their own temporary beauty. This kind of greatness is appreciated only by low-class men with no qualifications. Anybody want to explain that? It's a little unclear. At least I find it unclear. But Jiva Goswami says this. He focuses exclusively on this point in his commentary on this verse. He says, Hitveti ayam artha tam hitva yadi grihe sajjate tada yadi mahanuchyate tada dampati nam kamartham yugmi bhutam sripungsanam vayasa yovana matrayapi mahatvam adaro drishyate. There we see that there is love among a young husband and wife, but only when they're young. And why are they husband and wife? Kamartham yugmi bhutam. By mutual attraction, they have become yugmi bhuta, means they have become a couple. You see? In modern parlance, what do we call this? Love marriage. We call this, at least in Indian English, it's called, I don't think we say this in American English, but they don't have the concept, so any marriage they understand to be a love marriage, because remember I've said many times, there's no concept of dharma in the English language. That's why there's no word dharma in the English language. So the only other default is adharma, and adharma means kamartham yugmi bhutam. They come together only for the sake of fulfilling their desires. And therefore, once the desires are fulfilled, or if the desires cannot be fulfilled, then ayugmi bhutam. They separate more than 50% of the time, I hate to say. So this is modern life. It's also known as animal life. Dharmasya hina pashupi samana, Hitopadesh tells us. When you try to live as a human being, but without dharma, then automatically you really must become, at least, if not an animal, then at least tantamount to an animal. So this is what he's talking about. And specifically he says, vayasa means yovana matrenapi. It's only because of youth that they consider each other to be very unique and wonderful and special. And they give each other long lists in their anniversary cards. Now, if you choose to send your spouse an anniversary card, I'm not going to fault you for it. You can make your list as long as you need to. But anyway, the idea is that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur dilates on this. He says, we don't see old people doing this. And we don't see children doing this also, at least not yet. So why is that? Because it's a function of youth. When we're foolish, when we're young, and when we're under the control of hormones even, then we think in these ways, you see? But it's just a temporary affair, which is what Prabhupada points out in his purport. At least that's one way to understand it. Dvayoho yunoho paraspanam adarah syat. The love is only for each other. And he says, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur also adds to this, that this kind of love is appreciated only by each other, only by each member of the pair. Outside people don't think it's anything special, you see? And persons who are wise also, therefore the old people don't think it's really that. They know better. They've learned how things work in this world. And of course, children are completely pola pala. They don't know anything, so we don't see it amongst them either. But this is one way to look at it. So the purport here, Prabhupada concludes, everyone should therefore seek the shelter of the Supreme Soul, the source of all living entities. This is what he referred to in yesterday's verse, in the beginning of his purport. No one should waste his time in the so-called happiness, materialistic household life. So-called happiness, we've already discussed that. So-called happiness, because it won't last. Krishna mentions this in Bhagavad Gita. Nateshu ramate buddha, adi antavanta kaunteya, nateshu ramate buddha. The smart people, he says, they don't indulge in this kind of pleasure because they know that these things have a beginning and they have an end. You see? Dharma doesn't have any beginning and it doesn't have an end. That's why it's apratihata. And that's why we call it Sanatana Dharma. And that's why it lasts. But if you try to base your life or your relationships or other activities on anything other than dharma, then it's going to be threatened at some point. This is important to recognize. And that's why it's a waste of time to only invest your attention and your heart and your intelligence in mundane household life. Now, household life in and of itself is not something that necessarily has to be rejected, although everyone does reject it, right? Does everyone reject household life? Yes, they do. Everyone. 100%. No exceptions. Why?
Death.
This is the point. So you can have it for some time, but you're going to reject it at some point. Or maybe it's going to reject you. Sometimes you lose everything before you die. Also. Especially in Kali Yuga. But here the point is that in Vedic civilization, this type of crippled life, why does he use this word crippled life? It's a crippled life. Because you're hobbling along in ignorance. You're not investing anything in your real bank account. You're investing in this body's bank account. And when the body dies, everything you invested in that account is gone. To invest in your real bank account is the smart thing to do. And you're crippled unless you do it. So, in Vedic civilization, this type of crippled life is allowed only until one's 50th year, when one must give up family life and enter either the order of Vanaprastha or Sannyas. Vanaprastha means the independent, retired life for cultivation of spiritual knowledge. And Sannyas means the renounced order in which one completely takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're all going to have to give up family life. That's a fact. We may be so attached, we may be prepared, we may not be prepared, but we're going to give it up. Mrityu sarvaharashtaham. This is the fact of the matter. And you can't argue with it. You have no say in the matter. Everyone dies. Everyone in this room. The mortality rate, we say, is how much?
100%.
You've heard it too many times. So, this is it. I think it was John Maynard Keynes. Anybody recognize this name? John Maynard Keynes, famous economist. So he said, you know, the economists are always, you know, giving a long-range prospectus, right? He said, in the long run, we're all dead. How's that for perspective? So this is the fact of the matter. So Vedic civilization, which is a Shastric civilization, it's, you know, remember what Krishna said, everything that we do should be based on Shastra, you see. So the Vedic social order actually takes into account the fact that everything is going to be taken away from you sooner or later. So why not get ready now? That's called Shreyas. Just like you're going to grow up if you're only 4. So why not get ready? I know many, especially devotee parents, when they have toddlers, they generally start giving them some sort of education even before they're 5, you see, just because they're thinking of the future. So in the same way, we have to think about the fact that death is coming, and whether we're ready for it or not, whether we want it or not, whether it's comfortable or not, it's coming. You have to be ready for it. Otherwise, you're going to be taken by surprise, and you'll be taken for a ride. And where's that ride going to take you? It's going to take you to Yamaraja's kingdom, where you have to have an interview to discuss the You, at the time of death, you get a tap on the shoulder, and you turn around, and it's Chitragupta. Who's Chitragupta? He's the secretary of Yamaraj. Excuse me, sir, we have to discuss your account here. You've got some karmic debits here that we need to clear. You're in the red, I'm sorry to say. So, you know, that's uncomfortable. And why not think about that now? If we become karmic, then it's automatic. We will be elevated to the sattva-guna. It's a very interesting point before we end. In the beginning of chapter 17, we might as well read it. Arjuna asks Krishna, I'm sorry, not chapter 17, chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asks Krishna about renunciation. He says, I wish to understand the purpose of renunciation, tyaga, and of the renounced order of life, sannyas, O killer of Keshi, Rishikesh. And Bhagavan answered, giving up activities that are based on material desire is what great learned men call sannyas. And giving up results of all activities is what the wise call tyaga, renunciation. You got this? So sannyas is a particular order of life that you take. It's a formal order. We've seen them. They hold the danda, they wear the saffron cloth, they take strict vows. But tyaga is something else. What is tyaga? Anybody got it? To give up the results of your activities. It's a subtle distinction. Then he goes on to explain a little bit. This is the first, say, half dozen verses of chapter 18. Some learned men declare that all kinds of fruitive activities should be given up. Yet other sages maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned. Okay? So some people say everything has to be given up at some point, and other people say no, sacrifice, charity, austerity, they should be continued. Now Krishna continues. Nishchayam shrinome tatra tyage bharata sattama. Now hear about tyaga from me, O bharata sattama. And I will tell you definitely what I think. Renunciation is declared in the scriptures to be of three kinds. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. Yajna dana tapak karma na tyajyam karyam eva tat. Yajna danam tapascheva pavanani nimishina. He says. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. So here we have it from Krishna. We don't agree with this philosophy that all activity has to be given up, because Krishna himself makes it very clear. He continues now, all these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of results. They should be performed as a matter of duty. O son of Pritha, that is my final opinion in the final chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to have renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. Naiva tyaga phalam labhet. What does that mean? He doesn't get the result of tyaga, because it's not real tyaga. He's giving it up for himself, you see. Karyam ityeva yat karma niyatam kriyate arjuna sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva satyaga sattvikomadaha. Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done, and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. So this is his answer on this question. The intelligent renouncer, situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work nor attached to auspicious work, has no doubts about work. It is indeed impossible for an embodied being to give up all activities, but he who renounces the fruits of action is called one who has really renounced. For one who has not renounced the threefold fruits of action, desirable, undesirable, and mixed, accrue after death. But those who are in the renounced order of life have no such result to enjoy or suffer. So at the time of death, we may get something we want, we may get something we don't want, and usually we get a combination of each. You see? If we have been attached to the results of our activities. But if we perform our duty without attachment, then we don't have to worry about any of this. We're going to be elevated. This is the point. Okay. So that's just something we can take note of here. And the point that Prabhupada is making is that in the 50th year, one has to become either renounced or detached. Tyagi. You can say vanaprastha means tyaga. Because although he's still technically married, but he's not, certainly there's no question of procreation any longer. There's no question of sex life. And he's not even really working actively in the world either for fruit of gain or for monetary remuneration. He's independent. He's got some savings, perhaps. He's renounced, and he's cultivating spiritual knowledge. Husband and wife may travel to holy places where they execute austerities in one holy place. Like this. At least that has to be done. The best thing is if one can take the renounced order of life altogether. So this is the point. And if one doesn't do that, here the point of the verse is, if one remains attached to household life forever, or supposedly forever, then even though he may be considered a great person in the material world, his greatness is just temporary. When we went to a pharmacy just before coming to the temple, so while we were standing in line, what do you see always when you're standing in line in the supermarkets? What are they selling just near the check stand?
Magazines.
A National Enquirer. This kind of trash, tabloid, gossip magazines. And this is exactly what we're talking about in today's verse. Little classic, yeah, Hollywood, or Bollywood, same thing. These people are glorified only by, you know, not by the highest caliber of people, we can say. Only by very ordinary, unqualified people consider these people to be great. Because actually you can't count, even on both hands, the number of great Bollywood stars who have killed themselves in their Malabar apartments. And the same thing goes in Hollywood as well. So these people are considered great in the mundane estimation, but actually there's nothing significant about them at all. They're just as miserable as anybody else. Most of us are, because we're fish out of water. So a really great person is actually someone who develops gyan. And this is the point that the acharyas have emphasized in their commentaries. A person with knowledge actually understands what's valuable in the human form of life and what should be aspired after in the human form of life. And the person, that person at the time of death has something, just has some platform to stand on. Otherwise, when the carpet is pulled out from underneath us, who knows where we're going? Anishtam nishtam mishvancha, he says. It may be desirable, it may be undesirable, or it may be mixed. Okay, so these are a few things. Now there's one last verse. There's no purport on it, so I won't say much. I'm just going to repeat the verse. Tasmadrajodaka vishara manjumana sprihapaya dainyadimulam hitva graham samsrija chakravalam prasinghapadam bhajatakudobhayam iti. That means, therefore, O demons, give up the so-called happiness of family life and simply take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Narasimhadeva, which are the actual shelter of fearlessness. Entanglement in family life is the root cause of material attachment, indefatigable desires, moroseness, anger, despair, fear, and the desire for false prestige, all of which result in the repetition of birth and death. That's pretty strong, isn't it? Have any of us experienced this? Material attachment, indefatigable desires. What does that mean, indefatigable? Desires that, you know, seems like they never end, right? They don't get tired. Moroseness, anger, despair, fear, desire for false prestige. These are all part and parcel of mundane family life. Of course, while we're in that ashram, we can maintain it very responsibly, but it should be not mundane. It should be supramundane, that is to say, Krishna conscious. Then it actually still elevates us. Okay? Otherwise, all these things, they result in the repetition of birth and death. But if we can give up our attachments and take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Narasimhadev, then we have an eternal shelter that is characterized by fearlessness. Akutopayam. Sridhar Swami is writing in his commentary on this verse. This is the characteristic of Narasimhapada. He says, Narasimhapada, he glosses as Akutopayam in the verse. Okay? So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also glosses some of the terms of this verse. He says, Rajas. What does Raja mean?
Passion.
Yeah, he says it means Trishna, thirst. Mriga Trishna. Right? Thirst means Mriga Trishna. And Raja also means, what else does Raja mean? Raja Raja. Dust, yeah, Mithi. Exactly. So that it gets in your eyes and you can't see anything. That's the effect of passion. It removes your intelligence. So it's a nice word. And raga is the next word. What does raga, he glosses? Raga means abhinivesha. Abhinivesha. It literally means detachment, but here he says it means absorption. See, this is the problem. Then he says, samsrutesh chakravalam mandalarupam grihamadhya eva samsrutis tishtadi iti bhava. The idea is that in the cycle of repeated births and deaths in material existence, we have Raja and we have Raga, but the original mula of all the suffering that we gave this list here is actually Raja. Raja means passion. We're impelled to chase after some illusory happiness, and that results in all so many kinds of misery. So therefore, he gives this final instruction to the demons. Bhajateti asuran pratyupadesha. Who is he speaking to? Demons. Prahlad. We are also demons. Or at least we have demoniac qualities. So we can take these instructions as well. And what is the instruction ultimately? Bhajata. Worship Narasimhapada. Akutopayam. Worship Narasimha. This is Prahlad's instruction in Harivarsha, speaking to the residents of that section of Jambudweep. And with that, we've concluded our week of studying of these wonderful prayers. Less studied section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Generally, when we hear Prahlad Maharaj, we think of the seventh canto, because there the story of Narasimhadev is described. But these are very nice, and several of them are very famous verses also in this fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or comments. Krishna Kirtan isn't here to prompt you. You have to come up with your own questions now. Yeah.
It may pertain to yesterday's class, but we have heard like how Brahma has one desire to control the entire universe. Because of that, he is in this natural world. Like,
speak louder so they can hear you.
He just had one desire and he's been...
Brahma only has the desire to control. It's a subtle desire, and that's why he's in this world. So,
my question is, like, we have so many desires, and what is the hope, you know? he's all considered one of the Mahajanas, I guess.
Yeah.
And still he is, like, put into that condition.
Yeah.
But what is our hope, like?
Okay. So Avinash is discouraged because he's noticed that even Lord Brahma is bewildered by only one desire, but we're bewildered by thousands of desires we've already described. They're indefatigable. they're too numerous and they're coming one after another in fast succession. So what to do about this? It's very easy. This whole problem shrinks to the size of the water. The whole ocean of material existence shrinks to the amount of water that will fit in a calf's footprint if you take shelter of Krishna. And in the Kali Yuga, it's been made very easy for us simply by chanting.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
According to the instructions of the gurus and the sadhus and the shastras, if we, to the extent that we develop the attitude of akinchana bhakti or shuddha bhakti, as we described yesterday, to that extent, this process will have its effect. So all we really have to do is the same thing that we're already doing, but with deeper concentration, with greater faith, with more attention, with greater diligence. Is that okay? And how do we do that? You should know by now, because I said it practically. Yeah, it's very good. Somebody got it. I've said it every day so far this week. Sadhu Sangha. So that makes the whole thing very easy. Is that okay? Now, let me give you one more verse just to encourage you. Rupa Goswami says, Sanatana Goswami has written a very famous verse. He says, I don't have any love for Krishna. I'm not really even attached to the process of developing love for Krishna, which means sadhana bhakti. He said, I don't have any knowledge. I don't have any gyan. I'm not even from a good family. Even though he was from a Gaudiya Saraswati, the GSB, Gaudiya Saraswati Brahmin family. But he said like that, and he actually felt like that. He said, I'm just bereft of any means by which I might approach you, Krishna, so I'm feeling hopeless. That attitude of hope against hope is what guarantees you the Lord's attention. In exactly the same way that when a baby is crying louder, the mother gives that baby the attention. He may have so many siblings, but the one who's screaming more, and the one who is helpless, the mother will give extra special attention, you see? So if we put ourselves completely at Krishna's mercy and cry loudly his holy name in total sincerity, he will not let us down. Is that okay? Another devotee in Padyavali is quoted, who says, my dear Lord, when I think of the devotional service that was executed by the ancients, or in this case, Brahmas, you say, his idea, I just become completely discouraged. He says, what is it? Dina banturiti namate smaran yadavendra patitoham utsehe. Your name is Dina Bantu, and you know me. I'm nothing if not fallen, you see. Bhaktavatsalatayatvaishrute mamakam hridayam ashukam pade. And when I hear that how much you love your devotees, then my heart trembles and I get a little bit of encouragement. Rupa Goswami has written a beautiful prayer. Krishna deva bhavantam vande yadyapi samadhishu vidhagati pasyati natavad nakhagrami vichin. Brahma is executing his meditation on your lotus feet, but he cannot even approach the radiance of your toenails. So who am I? You see? But I know, because I've heard of the wonderful waves of your mercy, tadapi kripad bhutavitim. I know that you can deliver me also if you choose. So please, don't forget me. All these kinds of prayers the acharyas have given us to demonstrate the mood with which we should be chanting. Okay? If we try to imbibe that mood, then the Krishna will always respond. He will not fail us. Okay? Anything else? Yes, Raju.
What is the right age to get into Vanaprastha? Because now...
After 15.
Grihastha ashrama is shifting now. More and more people get married late.
Yeah, people get married when they're 35 now.
They still have responsibilities to fulfill.
Yeah, panchasortham vanam prajet, that is the injunction, after 50. So you decide what after 50 means.
So just because marriage is, you know, late, doesn't mean one prastha also will be late.
But death will not be late.
Yeah, this is the point. Death is not going to be late. you're still going to die, and you still don't know when. So that's the point. You have to be ready. Somebody had to hear something.
When do
some bad karma in the last jhanma?
Well, the way reincarnation works, when we fall from the spiritual world into this material world, we're given a light sentence in the beginning. And our first birth in the material world, we generally take birth as Lord Brahma. You used to be Lord Brahma, do you remember? You used to organize the whole universe. So when we take our first birth, it's Brahma. And as he said, Brahma's material desires are only very subtle. His only material desire is that he wants to control things. You see? He wants to exercise his creative, you know, abilities. And if, as Lord Brahma, we take to Krishna consciousness and perfect that process, then we go back. No further questions asked. But if we don't, then we, depending on how we've acted as Lord Brahma, depending on what we desire, we will take our next birth. You see? And we may go into any one of 8,400,000 different channels or different species of life. But no matter how far we sink down on the hierarchy of species in this material world, we always move up gradually towards higher and higher modes of consciousness. And after long migration through many other animal and other kinds of material bodies, now we finally become human beings again. And this human body is actually considered to be the most conducive out of all the 8,400,000 different species, because it's only in the human species that you can cultivate an awareness of dharma and you can cultivate the science of Krishna consciousness. So although it looks to us like it's much worse than the demigods, but from a spiritual perspective it's much more conducive. It facilitates spiritual advancement much better than the demigods' birth. That's why the demigods themselves are actually praying to come and take birth as human beings. Because in one life you can get it all done, you see? And it's only 100 years. And 100 years for us is much less than 100 years for Brahma. Brahma's 100 years are long, long, long time, you see? So human birth is actually it's a very fortunate birth. Is that okay? Yes.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has mentioned like in the upcoming Kali Yuga, only through nama sankirtan, that's the only way of coming out of material race. But in the scriptures anyway, it's mentioned about the previous Kali Yuga. So in this Kali Yuga. What about 25th Kali Yuga, 29th Kali Yuga, 18th Mahayuga Kali Yuga?
What exactly you're asking? Are all the Kali Yugas the same, or is some of them
better? Yeah, I'm asking this Yuga, this Mahayuga Kali Yuga. What about, is there any mentioning about the previous Mahayuga Kali Yuga?
Yeah, there is.
Are they the same as we are? We use plastic bottles today. I'm just curious.
Well, their characteristics are always very similar. But there is one special thing about this Kali Yuga that is not shared by any other Kali Yuga. And that is that Krishna himself appears in this Kali Yuga in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to teach this process of Nama Sankirtana. In other Kali Yugas, there will be another avatar who teaches the chanting of the holy names, but he will not be Krishna of Swayam Bhagavan himself. He will be some other incarnation of Vishnu. And for those who are trying to attain love of Godhead, and particularly they're trying to attain Vraja Prema, the love of the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna's most internal, intimate associates, this is a very, very special opportunity. It doesn't come in every Kali Yuga. Every Kali Yuga is a bad deal in some respects, but it's a good deal in that the chanting of the holy name can redeem us more quickly than in other Kali Yugas. But in particular, this Kali Yuga is an extra special advantage because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Is that okay? It's very hard to explain in just a few words just how special this Kali Yuga is. Swayam Bhagavan himself comes in this Kali Yuga to just give out love of Godhead free for anyone who will take it. That doesn't happen in every Kali Yuga.
Okay.
but it's happening now, so we should take advantage. You have a question?
Yeah. In this modern age, what I've been noticing that the youth are staying away from spirituality. They go towards spirituality after midlife, mid-age, or when they become senior citizen. Now, if I compare the modern time with 50 years ago, the people were getting in touch with spirituality at early stages of life. So as time goes by, that in getting in touch with spirituality is also getting extended towards the end of the life. So, one of the factors is parents not involving their kids in early stages of life during their childhood. And there are so many other influencing factors also. So, what is your advice to the parents so they can help their kids getting in touch in their early stages?
This is a very, very good question. And I'm going to answer it on the basis of my personal experience. I think that the responsibility is not only with the parents. The responsibility is with the entire society. And I also think that Srila Prabhupada saw this and many other aspects of the Kali Yuga, and that for that reason he gave the instruction to his disciples, the initiated membership of ISKCON, that we should implement in our society the ordinary codes of Varnashram Dharma. Because a Varnashram society is a society that sustains spiritual culture in the best possible way within this material world. Because that's the eternal paradigm. Sanatana Dharma means, the word Dharma itself means, tri dhatu, means to sustain something. So the nature of the Kali Yuga will erode all things religious. Kalim Sattva Haram, Srimad Bhagavatam says. If it's Sattva Guna, Kali Yuga takes it away. You see? But Dharma sustains that Sattva Guna. And as long as we follow the codes of Dharma, then we will be elevated, at least to the level of Sattva Guna, if not beyond that. But especially if we're chanting, we can easily go beyond even Sattva Guna. We can go back to Godhead, even in this Kali Yuga. Especially in this Kali Yuga, as we were saying in regard to her question. So I think Srila Prabhupada saw this. We see, the Panaparagat Shishtachar is eroding because people don't want to follow it. That's all. It's a choice, really. And parents in particular, they do have that much responsibility. But the society is nothing if not symbiotic, so it takes everybody. I mean, sometimes they have this saying, it takes a village to raise a child. That's the understanding. So, you know, it is a cooperative endeavor. And if, even on a local level, if we can have communities that sustain Dharma in this way, then we will see communities in which the children become more dharmatma than in the outside society. I think Srila Prabhupada saw this, and that's why he said that the Varnashram Dharma is the remaining 50% of my mission. It's cultural refinement that's necessary. It's a subsidiary aspect of Krishna consciousness, but a very important one at the same time. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Thank you so much for being here in class. When the Kali Yuga, the Yuga cycle ends, once Lord Kalki comes and he finishes everything, establishes Satyuga again, when it starts again, will it start with the same events that happened in the previous Yuga, or will it be new events?
This is a very good question. When we go to a Rite Aid store, we will find all the same merchandise, and the store will be arranged pretty much in the same order in any Rite Aid branch. The physical location may be a little different every time. The building will be a little different. But basically the same stuff is there in the same order, and the same staff, and everything is the same. You know what to do when you walk in. So it's like that with each creation, and it's like that with every kalpa and every universe. Everything comes in basically the same way. And with these chaturyugas as well, it works like that. But there are individual varieties, according to some minor differences may be there. Sometimes people get bent out of shape because they find contradictions from one Purana to another Purana about certain things, like cosmogony or about the pastimes of the Lord. And these things need not trouble us so much if we consider the infinitude of material universes that exist and the slight differences amongst them. What determines the differences from age to age and from universe to universe? Consider this. For whom is this material world meant for? Huh?
What the people want.
This is the point. This universe only exists because we want to escape from Krishna. We want a place to come and enjoy independently of Krishna. So depending on what we want, every time it's going to play itself out a little differently according to what the desire of the multitude of the jivas is. You see? So we get variety from one age to another and from one universe to another. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, further than that, related to the same question. Thank you for the answer. So Mahabharata will happen, Ramayana will happen, and
yes.
Samhita will happen, that will all happen. Say for example, if you know somebody is in this material world right now, they don't go back to the spiritual world, will they have the same events in the next yuga? I mean, say, what I'm trying to say is, you know, I'm practicing spiritual life. For some reason, you know, I'm not a successful yogi, and Krishna says, you know, you get devotional service again in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
Then, how do I put this? In the next kalpa or in the next yuga, what will be my course of action or destiny?
What you're asking is extremely subtle, and so I'll try my best. There's a number of things to consider here. One thing is that each of us occupies a particular post. Just like in a company, there's a CEO, there's a treasurer, there's a, you know, IT guy, there's, you know, different posts. The job description doesn't change, but the individual that fills that post may change. So the individual may have his own quirks and his own way of doing things, but basically he's doing the same thing. You see? So in this material world, everything is static, actually. There are preset, you know, like I want to say, stock characters that we play when we come into the material world. Sometimes we become Indra, sometimes we become Brahma, sometimes we become human beings, sometimes we're sages, sometimes we're demons, sometimes animals, adi, 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 okay? So that's one thing. The other thing is that we have our desires that we're working out on a spiritual level. And we have our ambitions that we want to fulfill in this material world. If we are not liberated by the time the universe shuts down for to wait for the next manifestation of the creation, then we go into dormant mode. It's kind of like when a Mac computer is sleeping. You know, the thing is still there, you just have to wake it up. So when the creation is created anew by the Lord, then all the living entities and their dormant desires from the last creation, they come back into play and they resume their spot where they left off. You see? There's progress. That's not static. That's going according to our own spiritual evolution. But the slots that we fill, potentially, they're very numerous, but they're still static. You see the difference? So it's a balance of those two things. Is it clear? That's pretty abstract, I know.
No, that was really... I always wanted to ask this question, but every time you do question answer, I should forget.
It's hard to frame the question also because it's so subtle. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes.
We work so hard. We were chanting to go back to Godhead, to in the abode of Lord Krishna. But if we go back and again we desire, we fall back again.
Right. Yeah.
So what's the use of doing all this?
Generally,
going through so many millions of lives and, you know, working so hard, and we, when we reach there, we develop desire, and we again come back.
And someone may get discouraged, like Avinash, and say, you know, I'm not going to bother with this. You know, because I'm just going to fall down again anyway, so jack and hang. No, the fact of the matter is that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that once having gone back to his abode, you don't fall again. You can if you want to, but you don't want to. Because it's kind of like in English we have the saying, once burned, twice shy. Prabhupada tells a nice story to illustrate this. His son was playing with an electric fan, and the fan is spinning around, and his son is pushing his finger in between the little, you know, the jali, no? So, Prabhupada is trying to stop him, but his son isn't listening, and then, so he's pushing his finger a little too far, one, so after that, he freaked out, and Prabhupada calmed down his son. And then when his son came back to play again, Prabhupada said, touch, touch. And the little boy said, no. You see? So it's like that. We're kind of like that also. We don't, you know, if you burn yourself on the fire once, you're not going to do it again. Is that okay?
Yep, thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Prabhupada, I have a question. You mentioned yesterday about the transcendental devotional service.
Yeah.
So, if I'm performing some service or doing some bhakti or, you know, chanting, so how do I know that it will be a transcendental, or like I'm satisfied, but how do I know that Krishna is also satisfied?
This is an excellent question. Actually, one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada the same question. Regarding transcendental loving service, we discussed this phrase yesterday. The devotional service, according to chapter 18, what is it, text 55 now? 54, I think. Has to be executed on the Brahma Buddha platform. Brahma Buddha Prasannatma. 40, anyway, I forget the number. But. So how do we know that we're actually there? And how do we know more specifically if my service is actually pleasing Krishna? I may be quite happy with it, but what about the Lord? So a disciple actually asked you the Prabhupada this question. Prabhupada, how do I know when Krishna is pleased with my service? And Prabhupada told him very simply, when he tells you. But more practically for us, we go by the pleasure of the spiritual master. This is one of many reasons that we have to accept the spiritual master. Because if we're rendering service, yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada. You see, that with the spiritual master is pleased, then Krishna is automatically pleased. And if the spiritual master is not pleased, then how are we going to attain our goal? You see? He's considered to be like the external manifestation of Paramatma, in the sense that, you know, they're in sync, as we say in modern American English. You know, they're working on the same, they have the same sense of mission, and they have the same purpose, and they understand the same thing. So, if the spiritual master is pleased, then Krishna will be pleased. That's the easy thing. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
You sure?
Then just, like you said,
if he is pleased, then we know Krishna is good, is manifestation of Krishna.
But you are not directly in contact
with Krishna. No, we don't have to be directly in contact with Krishna. We have a sponsor for our soul, so to speak, in the form of the spiritual master. And as long as the spiritual master is pleased, then we know that Krishna will also be pleased. And then, you know, as Prabhupada said, if Krishna wants to tell you that he's happy, he can certainly do that. Sometimes he does that, you see. Sometimes the pujari is carrying on his service and has no idea that he's liberated until Krishna talks to him and tells him something. There are stories like this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see.
We have the Guru, Brahma, Guru, Vishnu, Guru,
Vishnu. We discussed this yesterday. Because he's connected with Krishna's mission so intimately, therefore he's considered to be the representative of all the demigods, the Acharya. That's the interpretation of that verse as it's found in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Okay?
Some months ago, somebody else asked the same question, and Prabhuji gave the same answer to him. But I have the same question. Is there any way any other way that we can know that Krishna is pleased with us, apart from that we know that Guru, if we serve the spiritual master, he is ultimately pleased. Is there any other?
What we say is Guru Sadhu Shastra Bhakti Chite Te Koriya Ito. In our heart, we have to be very clear about what the Shastra says, what the sadhus or the Guru Parampara say, and what the spiritual master says. Because all three things should be saying the same thing. If they're not saying the same thing, then there's something wrong with one of them. You see? And as long as we know what these three are saying, and as long as we're doing what these three are saying, then we should be confident. We're looking for something else. I mean, I don't know what else you want. You know the Siddhanta, the spiritual master is telling you, and Krishna is also telling you. What more do you want?
I think the point is that devotees are as seedless, and we are not directly in connection physically with the Guru. And though we accept the Bapu and Vani and we do the service, but Guru is not going to give all these instructions with us. We are serving, so how will we know, like, you know, that?
There is another statement in the Srimad Bhagavatam that says, when you eat, automatically your tongue is satisfied, your hunger is pacified, and your body is nourished. So in the same way, when you make advancement, Srila Prabhupada said, you feel it. Just as nobody has to tell you that you're satisfied when you're eating. You can directly experience. This is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Pratyakshavagamam tarmyam susukham kartam. It's something that we directly experience. And when I say directly, that is absolutely directly. It's not mediated by sensory or intellectual, you know, input. It's directly in the soul, we feel it. So, that's also there. We feel detachment from matter, we feel spiritual happiness, we feel enlightenment. These things come in exactly the same way that as we eat, we gradually feel satisfaction for the tongue, we feel a hunger is appeased, and we feel the body being nourished. So that's another way to look at it. Is that okay? All right.
No.
Okay, so I guess it's time to stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to you, Lord God.
Hare Krishna. Today is the last day of Bhagavad Sattva. Please, open the closing. Very enlightening, isn't it? Very